You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is Spectrum West, arts and culture for Western Wisconsin. This week we're going to hear about some wonderful chocolate desserts and candy, award-winning stuff made by nationally respected and recognized chocolatiers and designers, Mayana Chocolate, made in Spooner, Wisconsin. The UW-Barron County Theater Company presents Rabbit Hole, a dramatic and expressive narrative that will move each audience. Jim Oliver has that story. Next Friday is the third Gatsby's Gala in support of and presented by Eau Claire Jazz. Partnering with UW-Eau Claire will bring you background and what's on the bill. Jim Oliver also has a listing of what's on stage in Western Wisconsin. And to get this show on the road, this. David Tank is a photographer. He's had his hand in other things, but photography and publishing seem to hold his attention these days. He's been here before, and one might wonder how much can we squeeze out of photography on the radio. Well, Mr. Tank doesn't allow dust to collect on his enjoyment of the medium. He's found ways to make taking pictures challenging, from 3D photography to his latest passion, recapturing scenes depicted on old postcards. His latest of three books is Postcards from the Past, Eau Claire. And if you know Eau Claire, you'll find this vantage point captivating. Let's talk about it. You and I have talked on several occasions, and it is tough on radio to talk about something visual. We want people to go to the websites and take a look at what it is you do. But other than locations and the time it takes to find them, how do these projects differ, or do they?
I think the one that differs the most with Eau Claire compared to the Dunn County books is Eau Claire seems to be on its third time around.
Really?
So I'm actually seeing the first round and then pictures from like the 40s where everything's already changing from the earlier stuff. And now that stuff's gone and it's changing again.
So what you're saying is other locations have taken a lot longer to
renovate. It seems that way, yeah.
Renovate.
They're more on the first time around. Eau Claire seems to be very vibrant as far as making a lot of changes. And I've really noticed that just in the process of shooting these, how fast things are changing now.
Yeah.
Especially in the North Barstow area. I've got quite a few pictures from that area. Things that you can't imagine that used to be up there.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, okay, we think of the post office. It's gone. There's now a parking lot there. What was there before the post office? City Auditorium was there.
Oh, really?
Didn't know there was one. And all of a sudden, it's like, wow, that was a big deal. A pretty good size auditorium.
And the post office came in the 60s, didn't it?
Yep. And that's when a lot of other things. There's the dental appliance company sort of across the street from the post office. That was a big hotel.
Oh.
That came down about the same time. Where the parking lot is across from Phoenix Park. There's mm-hmm. that parking lot right next to the river. Lovely little cafe that was there, and there was a train station there.
Oh.
All of that's really changed.
It appears a lot. As if Eau Claire decided to change the north side of the river, the Eau Claire River,
at least twice.
Pretty drastically.
Yeah.
More drastically than the south side of the river.
Seems that way, yes, looking at the pictures.
Till RCU moved in and started putting the Eau Claire equivalent of skyscrapers in.
Yeah.
So are you learning something new about the process with each one you do?
I am. I'm learning a lot.
What are specifics?
Well, I'm learning to be better on times of day when I shoot.
I just had someone looking at the book before you arrived. This is fascinating. I mean, he takes it, if he can, at the same time of day as the original.
Yes. I'm trying very hard to do that.
Are you trying to match seasons?
I am, but there are very few that are taken in the winter. And to some extent, that's kind of a challenge for me because so many more trees, I've noticed this all along, there's so many more trees today that taking the picture in the summer almost makes it more difficult because I can't see through them.
I remember you talking about some of the Dunn County and Menominee shots being particularly difficult to duplicate. Did you run into the same situation doing the Eau Claire book?
Definitely. Yeah. There are a lot of them that are tough to figure out. The dam...
You can say dam on the radio, by the way.
The dam mill was one of the shots that was really hard to get. And I did try hanging off a lot of branches, and I couldn't get it.
No.
So ultimately, I ended up with a shot coming from the north looking south, And I had to do that on a day that the sun wasn't shining in my eyes.
Okay.
But there wasn't too many options on where that picture was taken from mm-hmm. because it's taken over the river on the railroad bridge.
Ever had a situation where you took a shot and someone said, you didn't get that one right?
I did.
I mean, it's not the same
place.
That
happened in my shot in Colfax. I had a picture. I was sure it was perfect. And about a week after the book came out, a guy from Colfax gave me a call and said, you know, I really like your book. Nice you included Colfax, but the picture on page such and such is wrong. I was a block off. I reshot it. It's actually online now.
Oh, okay.
If you want the correct picture. And when I reprint, it'll be with the new
one. Well, that's a tough job. I don't know how you get them right 99.9% of the time. Easy to find old Eau Claire postcards, I would think, being a bigger city, it might be.
It's been pretty good finding them. Of course, most of them are not here.
Right.
They're elsewhere. Probably the farthest I found is I have a shot postcard of Big Falls. The card, I got it on eBay, but it came from Mumbai, India.
Oh, my. David Tank with us. His newest book is Postcards from the Past, Eau Claire. Especially fascinating if you live in Eau Claire, because you can spend a lot of time on each page and say, oh, look at that. It's the comparison of an old postcard. Some of them go back to the 1800s.
Yeah, there are a couple that are the Water Street area. Water Street was a real challenge. Apparently, postcard people didn't think much of Water Street. I could not find a single actual postcard picture of Water Street that was, you know, a postcard somebody would have sent. I wanted to include Water Street, and there are a couple of old pictures I recreated as if they had been postcards.
I should read up on the history of Water Street, because it is in itself a little bit odd, because it's its own little downtown area.
Right.
Apart from the actual downtown Eau Claire.
Yeah, and the rivers caused that. You know, it was on the other side of the river till the bridge went in. And then, of course, the Water Street bridges had a lot of changes over years,
yes,
too.
Including one very recent.
That very recent.
Facelift. What's the process of either using or not using a postcard?
I try to shoot every card I find.
You do? Okay.
I do. I actually go out and try to give it a shot, and some of them I'm convinced right away, this will be easy, and then I get there and go like, I don't think so. There's a shot I have of Half Moon Lake, and it's like, well, this is going to be easy to shoot. And again, the trees are so thick that you can't even see the scene today.
While you're standing there or sitting there with a camera, you have had people come up to you. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Is it fun to show them the postcard?
I always
say,
here's
do. Exactly what
I
I'm
show
doing?
Them. I show them exactly what I'm doing.
The interesting shots for me are the ones in the book whereby I know that you're standing out in the middle of the street.
Yes. I find I have to do that a lot.
You have a lot of reflective clothing, I hope?
I don't, but I sometimes do have a lot of fear, especially since Barstow is no longer one way. What I ended up doing was shooting most of the Barstow shots, or at least reshooting, on the 4th of July.
Okay.
I went back when there wasn't a lot of traffic there, was good lighting, and I felt I wasn't risking my life with mm-hmm. every shot.
There's choreography involved in all this.
There is. There's also
lots of it.
Asking people if you can, you know, climb up on their roof or get on their buildings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And people have just been wonderful.
There's a lot of postcards from the past online. If you Google just postcards from the past, you get albums and you get Billy Idol and you get a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, hopefully we'll start getting this one well-known enough that it'll start coming up high.
Yeah, at least you got the .net. The old postcards, many of them were kind of artist renditions of photographs. It was like the first Photoshop.
Yeah, the early colored ones especially. Yeah, they had to convert them into color plates. And you do find some kind of odd things in there. There's one picture, it's in the book, and it looks like somebody almost cut and pasted the cars and the people into it. That's possible that they did that. It's also possible that that was just a kind of a lousy job of converting it from a photograph into a printing plate. I can't really tell which it is. Also have one. It's supposed to be a night shot looking north up Barstow Street.
Okay.
The full moon is right at the end of the street, which, of course, is impossible because there's never a full moon at the north side of a scene.
Ah, boy.
And so you can tell that one was, quote, photoshopped.
Well, it's also like the trolley car in Menominee.
That's right.
That you had in your last book. Those
trolley cars show up a lot in Eau Claire pictures of downtown.
Weren't there any?
There were.
Yes.
And they do show up a lot.
I figured there were.
In fact, one of them that I was most excited about was the corner of Grand and Graham. I have a picture there of the building. The building still sits there. Mm-hmm. There was a trolley car in the picture, and that's how I was able to date the picture, because it says Altoona, and they probably took that right when that Altoona route started. Oh. I shot the picture, and I was putting my camera back in the car, and just as I was about to close the car door, I looked down the street, and the city bus is coming. Grabbed my camera, Ooh. Ran back out, and reshot to get the bus in the same position as the original streetcar.
Wow. One of the things I'm impressed with you about is the fact that you're smart, because you're finding ways of keeping photography fun and challenging. You're not just shooting weddings or portraits. You decided that here's a cool way of doing it, and I have a feeling you'll have more fun. So you're working on a Fond du Lac book now. Any other plans for postcards from the past?
Well, I've got a couple other cities I'm looking at. I'm starting to see what the availability of cards are. I want to know that I have access to enough cards to make it worthwhile before okay. I start shooting. Fond du Lac, I've mostly got wrapped up.
And you're doing that because that's your hometown.
Yeah, that's where I grew up.
Yeah.
It started kind of by accident. I was in Memphis last spring at an old antique store. The owner came up to me and, knowing nothing about me, says, are you interested in postcards? We just got a box in. I looked at him. It wasn't a very big box, but there were 44 postcards of Fond du Lac in that box.
Wow.
I'm like, I guess I'm doing Fond du Lac next.
So you
clicked into high gear.
Shelled out a few bucks to pick those up.
Yeah, they sold them to me for a buck a piece.
David Tank, Postcards from the Past, Eau Claire. The book is out. What's coming up with the
book? I have the official book release.
Yes.
On the Friday, the 11th of November at okay. the Volume 1's local store. That'll be at 7 o'clock. And then the following morning, on Saturday, the 12th, from 9:30 to noon, I will be signing copies at the Chippewa Valley Museum.
You can spend a lot of time with these books, folks. Dave, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
By the way, David used the word flume in the conversation. We don't use flume much anymore. Do you know what a flume is? I had to look it up to make sure. An artificial channel conveying water, typically for transporting logs or timber. That's the antique version. It can also be a water chute ride at an amusement park. So next time you're in the Wisconsin Dells, walk up to a young attendant and say, hey, you have a real nice flume here. See what reaction you get. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Al Ross. Thanks for being with us. Support for WPR comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, offering advice to women who are ready to start or grow their families. More information available at mayoclinichealthsystem.org/ready4baby. Support also comes from UW Eau Claire Forum Series. Public broadcasting travel host Rick Steves discusses European takes on America's war on marijuana, November 16th, uwec.edu/activities. Here's a Spectrum memo. Saturday evening, the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra presents Baroque arias and concertos at Grace Lutheran Church in Eau Claire, featuring soloists on violin, flute, and voice. Tickets at the door and at Festival Foods and Neff's Pianos in Eau Claire. Well, we're approaching time for another Gatsby's Gala, the lively and lurid social event that showcases the people and work of Eau Claire Jazz Incorporated in partnership with UW Eau Claire. It's only a week away, so we invited Jazz Inc. member Mark Blaski to stop by with some details.
We have a good board and some very good interns and a terrific music director, Bob Baca, and the work really starts to become fun yesterday when he shared with me the set list of what he's planning to play.
Right. I have that back here. Hang on just a minute. I have to reach back and grab it. And here it is. Gatsby Tunes, it says at the top. Wow. There's a lot of stuff.
He's featuring vocalists this year, and we have every best vocalist you could think of in town, virtually, and on campus, performing at least one or two songs during the
course of the night. Male and female?
Male and female.
Do they impersonate famous people, or are they just their own person?
They're doing their own person. For example, we have one young student, Bridget Cushman from the university. She's singing Minnie the Moocher, and she is kind of reprising the 1979 Cab Calloway version from the Blues Brothers.
That's on Gordy Bischoff's new CD.
It is, yes.
Sure
it's got a whole new life. So, Minnie is back.
Yeah, I see Bridget's name on here a lot. I mean, this second page is like Bridget, 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 Bridget.
That it is. She basically closes the show in the third set with kind of our 70s medley with September, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Rock With You, the Michael Jackson piece, uh-huh. Ain't No Superstition, which is an Evan Middlesworth arrangement of the Stevie Wonder Superstition melded with Ain't No Sunshine. So it's a great mashup of those two tunes.
Cool.
And then, of course, we close the night with A Little Party Never Killed Nobody, the Fergie tune from a few years ago. That's our traditional closer now, and Bridget will be handling that, too.
And that's your tagline.
It is. It is.
And I guess, has it turned out to be true?
Yes, I believe it is true.
Yes. Give us an idea of what it takes to put this on.
Well, it takes about 12 or 15 dedicated board members, a music director, 8 or 10 interns.
Are the ballrooms decorated?
The ballrooms are decorated. We have two jazz bands, actually three, Jazz 1, Jazz 2, and our intermission band is called the Bottleneck Brass Band, all students. That's a new organization, a new band put together by a student who's a non-traditional student who came back to campus to play music after being in other careers. Hmm. And he always wanted to be in a Dixieland band, so he started one. This is 3 solid hours of music in the Ojibwa Ballroom. This is where the Jazz 1 and Jazz 2 are. Mm-hmm. If you need a little break from the hot, smoky, dancing club atmosphere of that, you can
go into... literally smoky.
Not literally.
Let's make sure that people understand smoky. That. Yes, okay.
You can go into the Dakota Ballroom where we have a little bit quieter jazz and tables and food and other beverages. We also have a photo booth. And we're hoping to have a caricaturist because everybody's going to be dressed up in tuxedos and flapper dresses.
Sure.
And Al, I'd love to see a caricature of you in your flapper dress.
How did you know I have one? I didn't know that was getting around.
Oh, it's out.
So you mentioned a few things. Could they be new? Because my next question was anything different this year.
The selection of tunes is always evolving. Mr. Baca really tries to paint this by colors. It was very interesting when I talked to him yesterday. He said, well, this is kind of more of our orange and yellow songs, and now we're getting a little redder, and now we're getting red hot. I kind of see it. Well, actually, what is brand new is Sue Arfield will be a guest again. That's not new, but she has a new composition called Tsetse Gabor, like in Tsetse Fly and Zsa Zsa Gabor mashup. I'll hear this for the first time, I think, at dress rehearsal. Everyone will. So she's been a big hit in the past, and we're happy to have her back. There are some other people coming out of the jazz ensembles who are new soloists. Emily Watson has been a rhythm guitarist in jazz ensembles for a number of years, and she can sing terrifically well.
Oh, wow.
And has been a delightful surprise. Alex Carrier is a great trombonist. He'll come out front and play Misty, a nice slow ballad.
Have you asked him to play it?
For me?
Yes. So now, since this is a partnership between Eau Claire Jazz and the university, you're able to share resources, and their resources are things like Jazz 1 and Jazz 2. Pretty nice things to borrow for a night, I would think.
Very nice. Top quality jazz organizations. Top quality rooms, too, in the Ojibwa and the Dakota. And the food services and the beverage services. Also, what we're going to do for the third year, we try and create kind of a speakeasy atmosphere as you walk into the back staircase of Davies, lit by 2 big green floodlights. You don't use the main entrance of Davies. Mm. If you know the Gatsby story, Jay Gatsby was always looking for the green light across the bay, looking for Daisy Buchanan.
Didn't know that.
So we light the door with green lights so you know where to go. Mm-hmm. And then the stairwells, 3 stories, are just decorated with whiskey barrels and stills and antiques and photographs and phonographs of the period. We have the Memorial High School improv team acting out the roles of 20s jazz age people. We have the UWEC players there as well. En Avant Dance Studio is there. Just trying to create this speakeasy atmosphere. Then you enter onto the third floor and into the ballroom and it carried into a 1920s Gatsby flashy party scene.
I'm going to exude ignorance here. Was there a real Gatsby or was he fictitious?
No, fictitious.
Modeled after someone?
Maybe. I mean, Jay Gatsby's real name was something else, and he came from, I think, North Dakota or Minnesota in the fictional account.
Okay. Yeah,
Fitzgerald came from St. Paul, so he made this character up. But Jay Gatsby made up his own personality. His real name was Jay Gatz or John Gatz, something like that.
Okay.
And he just created his persona so that he could win over Daisy Buchanan.
Did he?
No. Jay. Spoiler alert, Jay dies in the end, Jay Gatsby.
Oh. This is from the movie?
We pattern our look after the Baz Luhrmann movie from 3-4 years ago, The Great Gatsby. But other than that, the theme is carried from the book.
Yeah, as you can tell, I've never read it.
It's a short read, Al.
What is that supposed to mean?
You mean
that I don't have an attention span? That I fall asleep when I read?
Well, so do I.
Mark Blaski, Eau Claire Jazz Incorporated, third annual Gatsby's Gala. It is Friday, November 11th. It is at UW Eau Claire in a couple of ballrooms in the Davies Center there, the Ojibwa Ballroom and Dakota Ballroom, each having their own mood. As a member of Eau Claire Jazz and one who's volunteered to steer other organizations during your tenure here in Eau Claire, talk about the experience of being involved with Eau Claire Jazz.
I was on a panel a few weeks ago talking about music and education, and with five musicians or music educators, and we all had to introduce ourselves. And I was the last one to self-introduce, and I said, you know, they're all music educators. I'm a civil engineer. I don't know exactly why I'm here. But then I went on to explain that many types of music move me, but really none move me as much as jazz does. Sometimes I tear up or the hair raises up on my arms when it's good and when it's pulling on all cylinders. I really like it. So the music moves me. That helps. Working with UW staff and UWEC interns is just a breath of fresh air and encouragement that there is a great future ahead for us, regardless of other rancor in the current society.
Other years that you and I have talked about the Gatsby's Gala, I seem to remember surprises. Are there any surprises this year?
Well, Mr. Jay Gatsby does float in and out of the party, and you will learn this when you read the book, that he did the same at his own parties.
How about if I read the book?
Oh, you will. He was kind of a mysterious guest at his own parties. He floated in, floated out, and everybody would ask, who's Jay Gatsby? What's his background? So we try and play that up, and we have a character who plays Jay Gatsby who floats
How
in.
Do we know it's Jay Gatsby?
Well, at one point he gets up and introduces himself.
Oh.
Very unlike Jay Gatsby, but how else are we going to do this?
That's true.
We don't have a 1922 Stutz Bearcat Roadster that we can drive through the ballroom. That would be nice.
Not yet.
Not yet.
So this has been successful for at least a couple of years, and I predict the third one will be just as successful.
We make a big push into all media now. Social media is a big part of our marketing campaign, as well as print and electronic. I can't emphasize enough that this is also, of course, open to the public. It's very reasonable. It's $30 for the general public, $25 for a student admission. And it will sell out. It's sold out rapidly in the last 2 years. There are still tickets available as of this broadcast and probably a few days after, but I wouldn't hesitate.
Now, period dress is kind of optional, but it is a formal affair.
Everybody does it. It is optional, but with the costume stores, now that Halloween has passed, you can go out to a costume store here and get a flapper dress. You, Al, could get a new flapper dress for maybe $10, $15.
No, and I can't replace the one.
Oh, that's true. Then it's
people are so used to seeing me in the one that I have. I would be unrecognizable if I had a different stuff more into the dress. And then they'll say, oh, new this year, Al.
New. New and augmented.
All right. So that's Gatsby's Gala. It's Friday, November 11th. You're a member of Eau Claire Jazz. Any cats you can let out of the bag for the Jazz Festival
Absolutely.
Of 2017?
Absolutely. We just signed our two guest artists for this upcoming Jazz Festival. This guy who used to direct this band with the Johnny Carson Orchestra, a guy named Doc Severinsen. We're terrifically excited to have Doc booked.
Cool.
And coming for both nights of the Jazz Festival, as is Carl Allen, a monster drummer, also a superb educator.
Wow, those are big cats.
Those are big cats. And then one last little thing about the Eau Claire Jazz. We are a nonprofit organization that works with the university to put on these things like Gatsby Gala or the Jazz Festival. And our long-range plan, which we've just started to put into effect, is take the proceeds from these events and start a scholarship fund at the UWEC Foundation for music students.
Just to show you how much Mark Blaski eats, sleeps, breathes, and wears Eau Claire Jazz, he has a purple shirt on today, and that's kind of the color.
That's
that
right off of our webpage.
Bingo. Mark Blaski, thanks.
Thank you, Al.
Fun stuff. The 11th of November, Gatsby's Gala. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. The Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls presents a Peter, Paul, and Mary tribute by the group Danville, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. If you come early, you can partake of the Danville Soup Supper. Get a call ahead and let them know you're coming to the Soup Supper, though. And don't forget the fundraiser Taste of the North. That's next Thursday, the 10th, and it's the 10th annual. Wow, that's kind of a golden celebration. It's an amazing list of flavor artisans poised to participate. The Heidi website is cvca.net. This is Spectrum West. Well, theater groups on West Wisconsin campuses of higher learning are busy this time of year, and Jim Oliver has proof in this week's Oliver Report.
Rabbit Hole is a play written by David Lindsay Hebert and was the recipient of the 2007 Pulitzer Prize for Drama. The University of Wisconsin-Barron County in Rice Lake will produce Rabbit Hole, opening tonight, if you're listening on Thursday morning, and continuing Friday and Saturday. With us by telephone is the director of the UW-Barron County production and senior lecturer of the university's Department of Communications and Theater Arts, Terry Wiesner. Welcome back to Spectrum West.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be back here.
Well, you've tied the production of Rabbit Hole to some recent and not-so-recent events in neighboring Minnesota. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, a very tragic tie-back, but certainly the discovery of Jacob Wetterling's remains and kind of giving that family a final episode to a very sad story kind of led me to lean towards this play as well. It's a very riveting story, and it's a great character study. Kind of trying to answer that question, you know, how do you survive after a loss like that? I mean, your life is empty. Where do you even go for, you know, help?
The Wetterling story, of course, dragged on for years and years and years. The story of the Rabbit Hole seems to be a little more conventional.
Yes, it's the story of a young couple who has a four-year-old boy. They have everything. Their life is going great. They love their child. They love their home. They buy the boy a puppy, and the boy loves the puppy and is playing with the puppy. And one afternoon, the puppy runs out into the street. The little boy follows and is hit by a car.
Mm.
And so, tragic as it is, we have to then look at what follows. And, you know, when we look at the Wetterling case, my gosh, how do you live 27 years not knowing? Well, this family only has been dealing with it for 8 months. And I think that's the thing that led me to this, is that there isn't really an answer. It says you should do this, or this is what you need to do to survive. It's more or less our watching them learn how they might survive. And we're not sure at the end if they're ever going to get over this or not. But we see certainly all the elements that everybody experiences in this type of loss. Anybody who's lost a parent or any family member or someone really close to them goes through this as well. So I think that's the universal connection with all of us, is that how do you proceed? You know, and it's a very engrossing play. You're gonna be drawn in quite quickly.
Now, it's not considered suitable for children. What kind of an age range are we talking about?
I would
about?
Say if you had a mature 12-year-old, probably they could handle it. The dialogue is pretty coarse. These emotions on everyone's level are right at the surface. And so reactions to certain things that maybe don't go their way or are roadblocks in their healing is certainly right at the edge. And they express themselves with a lot of the words that we would consider just certainly not suitable for younger children.
Mm-hmm. Where does the name come from, The Rabbit Hole?
Well, it is based on a story by the young man who was the driver of the vehicle. He likes to write, and he's a high school student, but he's interested in science fiction. He's interested in science, and it is this discovery of the fact that there may be alternate universes or parallel universes out there, such as a group of rabbit holes, or what they call a warren of rabbit holes. And in each of these rabbit holes, there may be a link to the person that you're looking for, or yourself, that there may be another version of you in this parallel universe. And the mother makes the comment, so you mean there may be a universe in which I am happy? And he said, yeah, sure, because if space is infinite, as most scientists believe, then there's any number of infinite possibilities. And so I think that gives her some kind of justification in hoping to find happiness, maybe looking for her little boy and all the things that she has at her disposal, that she continues to explore each rabbit hole that might be out there in her life.
He is Terry Wiesner, who is director of the University of Wisconsin Barron County production of Rabbit Hole. This is an all-student cast. How are the students coping with this kind of material?
Well, it's kind of surprising because it is so heavy. Most of them, I have one student who is channeling her parents, and that they had suffered a loss similar to this. So that's one way she is using it. Others have family members who have passed, grandparent or an uncle or someone that they've lost somewhere in their life. They've all been kind of identifying with that and the struggle that these characters are going through. Some handle it really well. Others don't handle it well at all. And so that is part of the maybe the reaction between each of the characters. Some handle it like the mother's younger sister handles it very badly. You know, she's out and about drinking and carousing and getting into fights. So, yeah, there is a lot of unusual ways of coping with the loss. And like the playwright has said in his notes and his directions, please don't try to make this overly sappy or syrupy where there's a lot of crying and tears, because that's not what this is about. It's about fighting to stay, you know, yourself and not lose yourself in this loss. And it's been hard. I mean, there's some scenes that are quite tough. I mean, when we kind of have a sense that maybe mom and dad are not going to stay together. You know, they just can't live with each other the way it is. You know, so it's a trickle down. And the sadness and the fear of the young man who was driving the car, I feel so sorry for. He says, maybe I should have driven down another street that day. Oh, how I wish I had. You know, and the anger that the father feels against the young man. So it is on all levels compelling.
How large is the cast?
There are five in the cast. It is the mother and father, Becca and Howie Corbett. Becca's younger sister, Izzy, who's the wild child. And then Becca's mother, Nat. And Nat is suffering her own loss earlier in her life. So she can identify with Becca, but she might not be that much help to Becca. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, Jason, the young man who was driving the car. So it's the husband, Jason, the young man, and then the three women, Becca, Izzy, and Nat.
Well, you know, we've never really talked about the UW Barron County Theater program on this program. Rice Lake is kind of a hotbed of theater with two community theater companies, the Red Barn and the Northern Star, and the university. Is there a relationship among the three?
Oh, yeah. There's actually five community theaters in operation around Rice Lake. We have the Cumberland Community Theater Company. We have the Barron Area Spotlighters at the Barron Area Community Center. We have Shell Lake, the Erica Quam, and then the Red Barn in the summertime, the Northern Star in the wintertime. And we all share actors back and forth, costumes, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a very active theatrical community.
Now, you mentioned sets and so forth. What kind of a set does this show have?
This one's kind of simple in that it's just their house, but there's different areas of the house. The kitchen, the boys' bedroom, the living room. So it's kind of one location, but three different areas within that location. The only one that kind of steps out of that is when Jason writes his letter to kind of explain his life and his reaction to what's been going on. And his, you know, the young man is just struggling with this as much as the parents are. It's very simple. It is, I can tell the audience that it is very open. The spaces are not complete, much like the characters. So you may only have partial walls in some spots. You may have full wall. You know, you may have a door. You may not have a door. So it's quite open and disjointed, as I would look at it. Incomplete.
Uh-huh. Well, getting back to the theater program again, how many students do you have involved in theater and communications?
Wow, it's hard. We are very small this year. Like I said, I've got the five performers. I have my lighting people. I have some tech people, probably four or five tech people, one light person. So I'm very, very small. Hmm. We are a very intimate group here. We do have a lot of people help out, like box office and ushers and that sort of thing. But it's not a large, I don't even know, I think I might have one theater major. Uh-huh. So these are kids just starting out that are trying this for the first time. maybe they did stuff in high school that they like, and they want to try it on the college level.
Just for the sake of discussion, let's say that a student isn't particularly interested in going into theater as a life's work, but perhaps would find the theatrical experience helpful in other pursuits.
Definitely. The theater, I can see it from one semester to the next, their growth in self-confidence. Once they've appeared on stage, you see a much better student in the classroom. They're more sure of themselves. They're ready to take on leadership roles. It really does give them this sense of ability and confidence in themselves to accomplish something and get it done.
What kind of a facility do you have to perform in?
Well, we are in a set at 349 seats in our theater. It's a proscenium stage. We don't have a fly space, so when we do large shows, most of our shows, the scene changes are on wagons or rotation or on backdrops, but nothing much flies out. We're real short over the stage area.
Well, the play is Rabbit Hole. It opens tonight, Thursday, if you're listening on Thursday morning, and continues Friday and Saturday at the University of Wisconsin-Barron County in Rice Lake. For ticket information, you can call 715-234-8176, extension 5457, or go to the university's website. We've been talking to the director, Terry Wiesner. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Again, the ticket information phone number is 234-8176, extension 5457. And the website is barron.uwc.edu. Jim Oliver volunteers his time to WPR covering theater and literature on a regular basis here on Spectrum West. We appreciate his contributions even more than you might imagine. Support for WPR comes from GreenRoutes.org in collaboration with Explore Minnesota, an online directory to on-farm dining, events, and sustainable businesses from local vineyards to pizza farms. GreenRoutes.org. There's one word that, when uttered, can force people from all walks and stations of life, the rich and noble to the meek and subjugated, to feel a literal flood of assorted sensations and emotions. Love, desire, hunger, passion, luxury, decadence, pleasure. The word is chocolate. An indulgence that, like the aforementioned sensations and emotions, also comes in assortments. And no one produces, arranges, and presents this delightful delicacy better than Mayana Chocolate, a company situated in Spooner, Wisconsin, overseen by Daniel and Tamara Herskovic. One of North America's top 10 chocolatiers, named by Dessert Professional magazine. Now, I can't think of too many other vocations nicer than being a dessert professional.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's a magazine, of course.
There are a few hazards, you know.
What are they?
Pretty much weight gain.
Daniel, I'm wondering if you began roaming the culinary countryside as a chef, a general chef, and then you discovered dessert as a specialty, or how did your history evolve?
I did get my training on the savory side, so learning how to be a well-rounded chef. I did work in the restaurant industry in New York, San Francisco, and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of chefs who don't like to make dessert.
Ah.
They just say, oh, I don't do desserts, and I've never quite understood that. I like both the sweet and savory. So I did get really into pastry, studying with a lot of pastry chefs from France and the United States, and while I was doing that, I found that chocolate to be the most interesting ingredient. And also, what I loved about making chocolate confections was it could last quite a while. Chocolate is a natural preservative.
Mm.
You make a chocolate bonbon, and it could be good for several weeks. And so Tamara and I had a catering company in Chicago. I created parting gifts for catering clients, and that's pretty much how the company was born.
Yeah, mentioning your catering company, I was reading about that, and I was thinking about the difference between catering and cooking. This is a little off the chocolate subject. The advantage that I thought of, a caterer has the luxury of more time and planning and creativity, whereas in a busy kitchen, one simply has to apply culinary art in small doses. Is that close to being perceptive or not?
Yeah, what's interesting about catering and the type of catering that we did in Chicago was for private clients. Mm-hmm. So they would invite us into their homes, which was an honor. We would develop a menu with them. We would develop rental lists, staffing, flower arrangements, even everything down from the music to the lighting levels. So for us, it was like theater every single time.
Wow.
And helping to create this memorable event. And so that, for me, is the biggest difference. Every event is a little bit different. We're bringing in the client's energy, their personality.
Uh-huh.
It was our job to reflect that in the food and in the event itself.
What an interesting perspective. I never thought of catering as theater, but when you say, the level of light and stuff, you're getting into everything. Technique is very important in what you do. How is technique applied, and how is it different than working like on a good repetitive golf swing?
Oh, boy. I think there's similarity. It is technique, and you got to get things right. You know, it's not only having the theoretical knowledge, but also having the practice in your hands, knowing how to mold chocolate well, how to get a really nice thin shell versus something thick and clunky. Not only do you need to know why that's important, but also have that practice in your hands, probably like a golf swing. We are what you call a chocolatier. We don't make chocolate, like, say, from the bean. It's a completely different discipline.
You get your chocolate.
Yeah, it's kind of like the difference between an instrument builder and the musician, or I'm the musician.
That's the voice of Daniel Herskovic, and also on another line is his wife, Tamara. They are proprietors of Mayana Chocolate, and that is located in Spooner, Wisconsin. Daniel, to follow up on what we were talking about, are there right and wrong ways to do things in a chocolatier's world, or is it carte blanche? Does it just beg for experimentation?
Well, there's some rules, like chocolate, before we can work with it, has to be tempered, which is a very temperamental process where you have to respect time and temperature. It's a reason why a lot of chefs don't like working with chocolates, because it's kind of tricky to work with. Chocolate does need to be in this state of tempering, which takes a while. So, yeah, that's one of the rules.
Tamara, you're in charge of, to make it simple, gift wrapping, not just shipments, but you actually gift wrap the chocolate itself with design and artistic application. You've been schooled in interior architecture and event planning. So tell us about how this all melted together for you.
Sure. So I have my degree from University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, mm-hmm. in interior architecture, a degree that I used, you know, with interior design within the field itself for a few years after graduating. When I met Daniel, we started this event planning business, and I was able to use my skill set as an interior designer or an interior architect. It transferred over pretty well over to event planning. As I referenced before, it was a lot like theater. Often with interior architecture, you could be working on a project with a client for sometimes years, working in every detail, and sometimes you might not even see the final project. So with interior design, it was a lot of fun. With event planning, I was able to pay attention to all the details, all the project management, the budget, all those little details, and work with all these vendors in a new, exciting way to apply those skills. As Daniel says, a lot of it is a science, and the rest is introducing that creativity. I found that those interior architecture skills transferred over quite nicely into event planning. And then when we started Chocolate, Daniel and I will have a vision, and it's my job to help support Daniel and the rest of our team in trying to get that vision, you know, produced,
mm-hmm.
Whether that be with the packaging or the decoration on top of the chocolates themselves, working with wedding planners and getting you know, chocolates for weddings, corporate gifts, making sure that all the details are in alignment with what the client wants, and all still while having fun. You know, it's chocolate. I often say when it gets stressful, we need to be focused on the fact we are creating something fun, enjoyable. We need to be passionate about it. Also, you know, it's about community as well. And we have a great community here in Spooner, Wisconsin. We have a great community here within our Mayana Chocolate family. And when we create gifts, it's to be enjoyed, whether someone purchases it from their local shop or online. They're buying it for either themselves to enjoy, mindful about the experience, or to gift it to someone for them to become mindful about this new world of chocolate that we have here at Mayana Chocolate.
Tamara Herskovic, who along with husband Daniel own and operate Mayana Chocolate in Spooner, Wisconsin. People talk all the time about marriages made in heaven. To say you guys are sweet on one another is an understatement. Talk a bit about the process that you guys share in planning and executing products, like new products.
Daniel is really, he's incredible at knowing his food science and also knowing the flavors that people want to eat. And so often we will meet and talk about his ideas and his vision and then put forth my input as well. We've also worked with some really great designers with the Harrington School of Design in Chicago, really tap into some great resources there, some really great up-and-coming designers and established designers to get our ideas to become reality. Yeah, packaging is part of the experience we want, whether it be our full-size chocolate candy bars mm-hmm. or our nine-piece bonbon collections. From start to finish, it needs to be that great experience, you know, removing the ribbon, opening up the lid, tearing the sticker off the tissue paper and folding it back, hearing the crinkle of the paper, lifting up the menu card, seeing the rich colors, and maybe even reading the menu card before you bite into that first chocolate and knowing what you might anticipate and hopefully we're able to match those expectations and maybe even surpass them. One of my favorite things about seeing them enjoy our product is hearing what they like best. It's really great to see each person's response.
Yeah, I mean, chocolate's one of those things where you're looking at what's in your hand because our chocolate experience has always been kind of somewhat limited. We kind of expect a flavor, and it's kind of nice when it's a pleasant surprise. Maybe this doesn't taste like a Hershey bar. That's kind of neat. How often does someone challenge you guys with a special request, like a life-size chocolate elephant or something? Has that ever happened to you?
Well, we get a lot of requests to make, like, say, our line of candy bars are really popular. We actually realized yesterday that our line of luxury candy bars are in over 30 states right now.
Wow.
So we'll get some special requests, like we have a store in Idaho that wanted us to make a bar with potatoes. So we made a potato chip candy bar, which is really fantastic.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's killer. Also, we just did a candy bar for a winery with their Cabernet Sauvignon. It's got crispy almond praline, Cabernet Sauvignon dark chocolate, and salted caramel. And it's really special.
Wow.
So that's mostly how we're challenged. Our chocolate's not quite like a novelty. Like, we're not making animals out of it, at least not yet. But we get challenged by creating fun candy bars.
Sure. Hopefully that potato chip candy bar isn't available only in Idaho.
Actually, it is.
Oh, man. Come on.
Willow Papery, and I believe it's in Ketchum, Idaho.
Well, you have to.
Around the ski resorts. It's really killer. I guess if we have more requests for this potato chip candy bar, I'll have to make some more for your listeners.
Well, you're going to have to have a cheese candy bar for Wisconsin. I don't know.
You never know.
Well, in perusing places.
Beer.
Beer. Bingo.
Beer and caramel pretzels.
Why not?
Yeah.
We're having a production meeting right now.
Okay, yeah, we just need a brewery to sponsor it.
No, I'll bet you that's going to happen sooner rather than later. In perusing places all over America where your creations are available, I was tickled to see that in addition to the expected places like gift shops and specialty markets and wineries and spas, you're available in at least a couple hardware stores.
Oh, yeah. The great thing about chocolate is everyone loves it.
No kidding. Well, I could go on and on and on about this. Sadly, we have time constraints, but I think what we've done is literally whetted people's appetites. Tamara Herskovic, Daniel Herskovic, thanks so much for being with us.
Great. Thank you very, very much.
So, Willy Wonka has nothing on Spooner, Wisconsin, and you may be able to change the way you experience chocolate after learning more at the website, Mayana, that's M-A-Y-A-N-A, chocolate.com. This is Spectrum West. As the weather cools down, the stages of western Wisconsin heat up. Here again is Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will stage The Kid Who Ran for President Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. Dead Man's Cell Phone will be staged by the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild through Sunday and the following Thursday through Sunday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The University of Wisconsin River Falls Theater will present Little Shop of Horrors through Saturday in the Blanche Davis Theater in the Klein Pell Fine Arts Building at the University. The University of Wisconsin Barron County Theater will present the Pulitzer Prize-winning drama Rabbit Hole through Saturday. Peter Pan and the Starcatcher will be staged by the University of Wisconsin Stout Theater through Saturday and next Friday and Saturday in the Harvey Hall Theater at the University. A dinner theater production of Guys on Ice, an ice fishing musical, will be presented through Saturday and the following Thursday through Saturday in the Northern Star Theater in Rice Lake. And Seen and Heard Productions of Fall Creek will present Arabian Nights Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
All righty, thank you, sir. Some quick Spectrum memos. There's a Writer's Read open mic next Thursday, the 10th, 6 p.m. at the L.A. Phillips Library in Eau Claire. Great group, the Old Fashions, appear Saturday evening at the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm. Tonight, Thursday, Johnny Piers and the Muttville Comics are coming to Ladysmith High School, guests of Flambeau Valley Arts, amazing rescue dogs who love to perform. At the Phipps Center in Hudson, around the campfire, stories from the national parks, Saturday, 2 p.m. And Saturday evening, it's a young performers concert at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory featuring local student musicians. That begins at 7:30. Next week, we're going to talk about noise. It's all around us. We'll also have a trio of well-known musicians stop by to talk about their new CD. The release is always greener on this side of the street. Ms. Greener takes care of promotion. D. Brown makes it all go round. And since BK is Burger King, then DK is Direction King, or Dean Kallenbach, whichever came first. We'll see you next week. Thanks.